Charlotte Soccer Show. John Hayes. I'm here with my very, very good friend Danny Brams to talk Charlotte FC's win over the weekend. Danny, I'm always happy to do a win, and I'm always happy to see you after a win at the Fortress on Saturday night. It's looking pretty crazy, Danny, that Charlotte FC is fifth on the table right now. I keep peeking at that table and asking myself, how high can we go?
And peek, Johnny. Here's a little peek. We will look at this more in depth later, but you're right. As we peek it up on the screen here, and if you're just listening, you know we're looking at a table that shows Charlotte fifth.
That's a very, very nice place to be at this point in the season. So, Danny, let's talk about that win. I'm excited to hear your firsthand perspective. You were at the Fortress on Saturday night. It was 1-0, a Kerwin Vargas goal. What was your big takeaway from the match?
My big takeaway was, yikes, unfortunately. I mean, we're happy about a win, but like, what can I really say? I know this may not be the most popular opinion because I think people like to sort of feed off of a win and they say, hey, we won. That's all that matters. But that thing should have been 4-0 easily. DC's a bad team. We missed many chances to bury them. Patrick Ojemong missed a huge chance. We're going to hear Dean Smith refer to that chance in a little bit, and he stayed positive about it. I'm not so positive about it. He skied the ball over the bar from 8 yards, and I think that's kind of unacceptable. I think that shot needs to be on target. We did get a corner kick out of it, but that's because the ref made a mistake. The ref was horrible, but I don't talk about referees, so I'm not going to worry about that, but he was horrible. I think Kerwin's whiff right at the start of the second half, Johnny, you were there too. You know, you're giving, you know, I don't sell yourself short over there, buddy, because you were in the Fortress as well. And you came up, you were sitting with us at the supporters in the tactical view for the second half. And we both looked at each other when that ball came in after the 1-0 lead. And we're thinking Kerwin's about to make this 2-0 because this beautiful cross comes in from the right. And Kerwin's standing there with just – he's just got to swing his foot through. He's just got to give swing it through, a little 9-iron maybe or something like that. And he just completely whiffed it on an open net. So that should have been 2-0. Patrick should have made it 1-0, if not 2-0 himself. I'm glad Kerwin's header went in. And a header goal from Kerwin Vargas is always a sweet thing, especially when it's right at the end of the half. And it was some sweet karma for DC because of some time-wasting stuff they were pulling earlier. But that should have been a blowout win, and I'm not disappointed, but I am mad.
You know, I'm absolutely thrilled because I did not realize the podcast was going to go this direction this quickly. I'm glad that it has because here we are talking about what did it feel like on Sunday morning. It felt like, well, the result happened, another 3 points, but it was a tough watch. And you mentioned the Vargas swing and miss. Quite frankly, I think I did the Men in Black on myself. I just wiped my memory clear of remembering the fact that happened as we were watching from the supporters section. It was so bad. You're right, Danny Brams. These missed chances continue to be a problem for Charlotte FC. But hey, I'm Mr. Brightside right now. I just want to take a look at that table.
Coming out of my cage, and I've been feeling just fine. Gotta be fifth because I want a home playoff game. Oh, wait, we need to be fourth for that. But pretty amazing, yeah. It's nice to see Charlotte. This is by far the highest we've been in the table this late into a season, right? This is uncharted territory for the crown.
It is, and that's why I wanted to celebrate that tonight on the show as we head into a match day in town on Wednesday. It feels good to be in this position, Danny. There's no doubt about that, and you can say that it's a professional fifth place. And the reason why is because Dean Smith has done a great job with this team and has been able to accumulate points, and that's the name of the game. It doesn't have to be pretty, and I'm not sure that he wants it to be right now.
Has not been pretty, yeah, for sure.
So it's fun to take a look at the table and actually see the fruits of thy labor.
Yeah, and you start to see how, like, you start to put some more relative value on our wins and losses, right? Like, when we beat Toronto 3-2 and when we helped, you know, we took Toronto toe-to-toe in Toronto and just lost to the Insigne Wonder Strike, you're like, well, Toronto sucks anyway. They're going to be down near the bottom. Well, no, Toronto's right there in playoff spot as well. That opening day opening match day win over NYCFC just looks better and better as they have just been on fire ever since.
And played them well at their place as well,
yeah.
Danny.
And we, yeah, again, losing just at the last minute to them. Even Chicago is starting to put things together after we embarrassed them 4 or 5 games ago. They've actually put together a nice little run of results. New England has even put together a nice little run of results, although they're so far buried and gone that it's going to be tough for them really to catch up. Although if they were to win their 2 games in hand, they'd only be 6 points behind. It's not the worst ever, but Atlanta.
Look at that form, though, Danny. Look at that form from New England. New England's found a way to win 3 matches in a row, which, by the way, you're down at the bottom of the table. So let me just point out the fact that there's Orlando SC sitting there in 14th position coming to the Fortress on Wednesday. Just to give you some perspective, they've given up 27 goals so far on the season, only one win in the last five for Orlando. They've lost both of their last 2 matches. I mean, this has got to be another 3 points, doesn't it, Danny? Into the plus 30 territory.
You look at that goals for and against column also, and you say Orlando is one of 2 teams that has scored fewer goals than Charlotte FC. So you can't be mad about that either, no doubt.
Yeah, so the defense is going to have, you know, hopefully a chance to create another clean sheet. Danny, let's celebrate that. Should we celebrate that for a second? A clean sheet.
I think we'll celebrate
once again.
8 clean sheets for sure. I think that's Kalina sheets, as we call them. Let's have another, as the graphic at the bottom of the screen says.
Yeah,
sure.
Cheers to that. There's no doubt about that. I mean, Christian Kalina, who didn't make MLS Match Day Squad of the Week, because clean sheets just aren't good enough at this point. He's got to have great games, and he's got to make big time saves, and then he'll get a position on that lineup.
That time wasting yellow must have been what did him in on making the team of the week, I suppose. But speaking of, as far as saves and ratings and things like that, here are the match ratings from Saturday against DC, and you can see it's really a midfield game. Kerwin Vargas on an 8.6. I think he gets a lot of that because he did do a very good job of being a defensive-minded attacker, and he did get the finish on the headed goal. But I thought Kerwin played very poor in attack overall. I thought Abada was very poor in attack overall. You see reflected in the 6.4 for him. I thought both our wingers were cooked early and often as far as their attack. Now, they did a great job of staying behind the ball and being compact and being organized, and I thought Milanda just ran the show from a defensive standpoint. But you know, some people I was Dean Smith called this effort a 6 out of 10. He said it's a 6 out of 10 for me. I'm just glad we got the 3 points. And I said, hey, 6 might be generous without Milanda's, you know, field generalship in the back line. I thought it might have been even a 4. So who knows? You know, if we're just basing what we saw and not necessarily on the result, it was not a great performance for the Crown. But I do think we did have Milanda. Milanda did do his job, and he did marshal the field, and he did make things happen. And he was set up by, you know, guys like Diani, Westwood, Bronico, and Vargas especially, doing good to track back, to stop balls in midfield. We were all worried about what Benteke might do. Benteke was almost a non-factor, and that was a good thing to see. He lost all of his ground duels. We were very skilled at taking the ball away from Benteke. Thought Urinen and Byrne got well up the sides. It was nice to see fullbacks playing that overlapping style and getting runs deep. And all that was all well and good. I don't know. Do you think a 6 of 10 is appropriate? Do you think maybe Dino's being harsh? Do you think I'm harsh to say it was worse than 6 of 10? What do you think?
No, I think 6 out of 10 is right on the number, because 5 out of 10 kind of insinuates to me that at that point you at least play to a draw. You know, anything less than a 5 and winning to me is – doesn't make sense. And maybe that's just, you know, my school of thought about how I read that 1 to 10 scale zero to 10.
Can I get a scholarship to that school of thought? I love it. Please.
So 6, it feels right. I mean, it's about as bad as you could play, really.
Finn likes a 6. We can hear him barking in the background. That's good. Yeah,
good to hear Finn on the podcast. It's too bad he's not up right now. In the studio here, the Charlotte Soccer Show studios. It's great to be on the show. It's great to be talking about a win. Also want to give a shout out to the Full-Time Roundup podcast as well. Our friends over there at the Full-Time Roundup podcast, if you haven't heard their podcast, make sure you check that out. It's a really great show considering the Euros are happening right now, Danny. So our friend Matt Geslin and Daniel Brackett, co-host of the Full-Time Roundup podcast, you'll hear Danny on that show And you'll hear me on that show as well. Over the next couple of months, talking Euros, talking Copa America, Daniel Brackett in Europe right now, experiencing that as well. So we're going to get his firsthand report on the show, what it was like to be there. So we've got some really fun episodes coming across the board as Charlotte FC enters into this really important phase of games throughout the summertime, the dog days of summer.
Yeah,
I called them, Danny Brams, and I think that's what it feels like right now.
We love a collab. We've always been down for a collab. Anyone wants to collab with us, hit us up. We'll collab for sure. I think as far as the dog days, yeah, it was hot. It was real hot out there. And I think that's where I want to go with our first soundbite, because Dean Smith did address the media today. He spoke a little bit on a couple of subjects, but I got one soundbite here clipped off of Dean talking about playing in the heat, something he's not really used to. So here's Dino on the heat and thriving and having to turn around so quick again for a double game week midweek.
Yeah, I think, you know, the game never changes. It is different in some ways. You know, I think the temperatures that you're playing at now, you're not used to in the UK. So, you know, we certainly have to be mindful of that. And our training leading into games and time on the feet and time in the sun. So, you know, that's something that's new to me at the moment. But there's a lot of experience here in our performance team that's helping me and guiding me with that as well. But yeah, in terms of the game itself here, I think players are developing. They want to develop, and you know, the ones who haven't been starting, you know, it's getting to that stage of the season now where they'll probably be starting to get a little bit more frustrated. And you know, my message has always been to them is prove to me you need to be in the team by what you do on a training pitch.
Interesting comments for sure.
And it's getting hot on the field and off the field is basically what he's saying there. Yeah.
It's fun to think about the fact that it's a new culture change for him to see the sun so strong and so bright that you have to figure out different ways to do and manage your time around how the sun moves in the sky throughout the summertime here in the Carolinas, because you got to either be out there on the pitch before 8 a.m. or after 8 p.m. Otherwise, it's pretty darn hot for these mm-hmm. these training days, and 7:30 kicks are just late enough, you know, to really feel a reprieve from that. But it was still really, really hot in the stadium on Saturday night. It will be again on Wednesday, maybe a little cooler on Wednesday. Either way, we can deal with it in the Carolinas. It'd be nice to have a retractable roof. It'd be really, really nice.
Does one of those cost about $650 million?
I think it's, right around that number. Right, maybe if you get it up to 800, I think, maybe you can put that roof on.
Put it in the tourism budget. Maybe we'll figure out what we can do for sure.
Yeah,
I think it's interesting that you have to – this is something like the idea that training is supposed to get players ready for matches, and now Dean's having to adjust to the idea that too much training might hurt a player's ability to perform in a match.
Yeah, that's a really good way to summarize that and say that in few words, that you're right. That keeping players fresh and off their feet is more important than running them right now. And who can step up? What was that quote that Dean had as well in this press conference about Brant Bronico, Danny?
He said he can run all day. He said he's like he said you don't need Duracell when you got Bronico.
He said that he's the strongest runner. Dean Smith said Brant Bronico is the strongest runner he's ever managed.
Yeah,
during his career. And
that's not just anecdotal. That comes from like data, and like that comes from like wearing the biometrics and like looking and seeing like this guy's numbers are just popping off the charts. It's not just the eye test. It's both.
It's pretty impressive. What'd you make about his performance? I saw somebody say at the number 10 on Saturday night, Brant Bronico, and it made me laugh. I was like, is he playing 10? I don't think he is. He's just playing in that midfield and does have freedom to roam a little bit, but I don't think it's a true number 10 role that he had on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, he's more forward than Diani and Westwood, and he is arriving at the end of balls sort of, you know, 30, 40 yards outside the box and sort of being counted on to like, he is that pivot point in the attacking zone as far as ball comes into him. He gets it back out to the wings, then the cross comes into Patrick theoretically, but no, that's not Bronny's. I mean, it's three number eights for me, with Bronny just being a little more advanced. We've long talked on this show about how we wish that Westwood would sort of take that role a little bit more and be the most advanced midfielder in the triple eight here, but it just doesn't seem to happen. And that's okay. But the thing of it is, and I, as I've said before on the show, and I'll keep saying, like, and this is not a slight to Brandt, but it's like managers look at Brandt Bronico and like, oh, there's no way that guy's making my starting 11. And then they actually watch him play and they look at the analytics and they see the numbers and like, how can I keep him out? They can't find a way to bench him because they just realize that there's something intangible that comes with having that hard of a worker, that powerful of a runner, the strongest runner you've ever managed on the team. So it's a good problem to have. I think if we were to sign a DP number 10, all of a sudden it becomes Brandt and Deani fighting for that second eight spot next to Westwood, and it's a little bit more of a decision. But since we're talking about him, let's listen to what Bronny also addressed the media today. It wasn't just Dino. So here's some various thoughts from Bronny talking about the defense, the offense, the turnaround, and the playoff hopes. And here's what Bronny had to say today, and then we'll continue the discussion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say, like, defense wins championships. If you can get the defensive part right, then you can start creating and having fun, you know, on the offensive end. But I think, like, a defense-first mindset, just collectively, you know, taken by everybody, is probably the most important thing throughout the locker room. I think it's just the clarity of roles that Dean's implemented through each individual first, and then the team collectively. I think everybody knows what they're supposed to do and when they're supposed to do it. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that we need to start to, I guess, have more quality in our finishes. You know, I feel like we have been creating chances, but it's just about, you know, getting the ball in the goal. Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time we're going to do this year, and a lot of guys that have, you know, played throughout their lives, three games in 1 week is pretty normal. And it's always that next game, you know, next result mindset. That's what winning teams do, and we're focused on Orlando now.
We go again.
I mean, I'm not going to take a look at Brandt in that video and try to disagree with anything the man's saying. He looked like he would, you know, beat the living hell out of anybody, mm-hmm. you know, with those guns he's got.
Yeah, he's rocking the guns out for sure.
We talked about the sunshine. It's suns out, guns out for Brandt in that video for sure. Throw that back up there, Danny.
It always is. It always is for Brandt. But here, let me load it up this way. Yeah, Brandt's he likes to go sleeveless, and you can't really fault him for that, right? I mean, I would go sleeveless if I had those guns myself, I suppose. But I'm trying to get there. I've been hitting the gym a little more, working on my fitness. You know, a little pale. You know, what can I say? But I'm not going to show off too much. But here it is, and just like, wow. Look, just the tone, the definition, it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, he's in peak physical condition, and the manager's bragging about his endurance, and Brandt is somebody that is definitely one of the faces of the club right now. Who else? Ashley Westwood, would you say, Danny? The two faces of Charlotte FC right now, would you say it's Brandt Bronico and Ashley Westwood?
Yeah, and I would say Milanda is making a case for himself as a face of the club as well. I think he's the one when people who are not in Charlotte are thinking about Charlotte FC, and they look at the defensive record and things like that, and they think, you know, how are they doing that? They think of the young center back, and then they're like, yeah, it's got to be Milanda.
Fair enough. I think it's Ashley Westwood because he's the captain.
Yeah, primarily Westwood.
I think it's Brandt because he's the local kid. People really know him. And I think
I got Ash right over my shoulder here.
So I think that both of these players are huge for Charlotte FC. I think they're both really, really nice players. My question to you is, who can Charlotte FC go out in the transfer market and get that is even a bigger face of the club right now? Because that's I think, something that, to me, when you look at the best teams in MLS, when you look at that table, when you think about MVPs, a team like Cincinnati, who has... You know, Lucho. Everybody knows who Lucho is. Sure. Across, you know, Acosta is I think one of the best players in MLS, and people know that. And when you think about Dennis Buanga, when you think about a player like that caliber, who they know across the league. Patrick Aljamain had a chance to maybe be that for Charlotte FC and hasn't really stepped up there. Kerwin Vargas, he scores a goal as well. I think when it comes to the club culture, Danny, when it comes to this club taking the next step, even though they look so good on the table, this club needs a face of the team, somebody to come in, a high profile, high money, big dollar signing that takes this club to the next level. I think that, to me, is when we think about what this summer looks like, that's number one priority. That is the number one priority for this club. So I don't, you know, as far as ideas are concerned, we have weeks to talk about that subject.
Yeah.
But for me, Danny, there's a really great group in this locker room right now. You mentioned it. Ashley Westwood, Brant Bronico, and of course, Adilson Milanda, Andrew Privet. The spine of this team is really, really good. We just need that one player, that one star that can come into this club and score goals. And it has to be somebody in the next couple months during this summer window.
And you can't rule out Abada just like sort of taking over and starting to get, you know, Abada could get himself to where he's like scoring every game. I think that's certainly still, you know, in the mix.
A really rough one on Saturday, though.
Yeah, really rough game. Really rough game. And you notice him and Kerwin kept switching sides. It's like every 10 minutes or so, like they would switch sides. And I think it's because Dino was trying to set Abada up for success. Abada started on the right and Kerwin on the left. And then a lot of our attack in the first half was coming through the left. And so Dino switched them side to side because he said, hey, if we're getting the ball on the left, I want the ball at Abada's feet. And so he moves Abada over to the left. And he didn't really do anything with the opportunity. So then they switched back. And, you know, and eventually, you know, Kerwin scores that goal. It's a corner kick, but it was at a point where he had switched back over to the left right before the end of the half. So I still have faith in Liel. He's got – a lot going on in his life. He just got engaged and things like that, and he's still finding his way in a new country. He's still 22 years old. You know, he doesn't turn 23 for another 5 months. So he's got a bright future, and he could still have a bright present. And he is a big money man. I mean, we paid $8 million for him, but you talk about a big money signing. It's almost like, does Charlotte FC have the chutzpah to go out and fire $15 million at a real superstar, at someone who's just like Bafo, or, you know, or even like $25 million for Antoine Griezmann or something like that, you know, like the real big dollar signing. I don't know. Like, people can, there's all kinds of rumors and scouting and things like that, that I'm not necessarily, I don't find that the most intriguing. It's not really like my cup of tea. I'm more like, let's analyze them when they get here, because trafficking in rumors and scoops and things like that has never really worked out for me that well. But, there was a guy that Columbus just signed who you mentioned, Denny Bouanga for LAFC. He came from Saint Etienne in the French league. Well, one of his former teammates, this guy Dylan Chambost, who's the MVP of French League Two and got Saint Etienne promoted this past season, he just got signed by Columbus. And that's not a superstar name, but like, those are the types of players that, you know, could be thriving over here. We've had pretty good success in the French league for the most part. So there's names out there. I don't really feel great throwing a bunch of names out because I don't really care and I don't need to be wrong about it. But
one name that I thought of over the weekend was Christian Eriksen. That was name I thought about as he scored for Denmark, and an unbelievable moment for him. I thought to myself, Christian Eriksen, Charlotte FC needs a creative playmaker. Does Eriksen want to finish his career in MLS? That type of player would be fantastic.
Just turned 32. I know that some people think that's old, but, you know, 32, that's two good years left in my book. It's not like he's about to turn 33. He literally just turned 32 a couple months ago.
What about a Wout Weghorst, somebody that came on for the Netherlands, a game-winning goal for Wout? Woot, is that how you...
Woot Weghorst.
Thank you very much for saying it that way. That's appropriate. Woot Weghorst. It's more fun to say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So cheers to him for a first touch goal. You don't see that very often, a first touch game winning goal.
When I've talked to people at the club, you know, sources at the club in the front office who are generous enough to spend a few minutes in conversation with us, the thing that keeps being assured to me is names that fans will recognize. So maybe fans don't really recognize Woot Weghorst. I'm sure that fans will recognize Christian Eriksen. I think Christian Eriksen would be an absolutely tremendous signing. The guy just scored in the fucking Euros. Like, he was buried on the bench by Erik ten Hag at Manchester United for some reason. I don't know why he didn't get much field time at Man U in the past second half of last year. But maybe that'll motivate him to want to come over in MLS and prove some people wrong. I think he'd be an absolutely fantabulous signing.
You mentioned Griezmann. I mean, obviously that's a dream scenario.
I mean, he's going to Los Angeles or New York if he comes to America. But I mean, money talks. You know, money talks.
It does. It does talk. So it's going to be a really exciting summer window because Charlotte FC has the money. I just thought of an idea, actually. You know that $650 million that David Tepper is going to get from the tourism tax here in Charlotte? why don't we take just like a significant chunk of that and have the city pay for a player just like they would pay for the stadium?
Yeah, bring in some tourism that way. You know, why not? Right? I don't see why not.
Bring one. You saw what happened uptown when Messi came to Charlotte.
Yeah. Players will attract a lot more tourism than any stadium features. I can guarantee you that, no doubt.
So why don't we just reallocate those funds and just kind of take another look at that balance sheet and see if I'll circle $25 million. $25 million of the, I mean, that's a pretty good deal actually. We're already putting up already $650 million the city is bringing to the table.
Right.
Let's just take 25 of that and throw it towards one of the best players in the world and try to get somebody in town who wants to take this club to the very, very next level. Karol Swiderski is probably 2 or 3 steps below that level.
Yeah. And Karol, you know, it's well documented how many times I've tried to freaking plant my flag in the Carol's never coming back camp. And I thought I had the backing of the sporting director on that, but apparently I did not, because now he's changed his mind and said, you know, it's, possibly he could come back. So who knows? I'm done making big pronouncements on things related to Karol Swiderski, but I do think that he's sort of now wants to come back because all of a sudden he's finding it harder to be wanted over there in Europe. And he's realizing that maybe he should not have been so vocal about how badly he wanted to leave, because now it's like there's a little bit of a reluctance, I feel like. If things were all well and good when he left, then he would already be back. You know, like as soon as Verona said, we're not going to trigger the purchase clause, which I was led to believe was automatic, but it was not. But all the reporting up to that point told me that it was. But as soon as that Verona guy came out and said, we may or may not buy Karol, then you think the wheels would have been in motion and like greasing the tracks for as soon as he's at the Euros now, obviously. But it would be like, I feel like if he was coming back, we would already know, is what I'm trying to say.
I disagree, just because I think that his performance at the Euros dictates his price. I think if I'm Zoran Crneta, if I have a deal done for him now, I'm not signing it, because I want to see how he performs in the Euros. If he goes out there and plays well, he played 30 minutes for Poland over the weekend. If he goes out there and plays well, Poland loses, though. So Poland loses. They give up. They score early in that match over the weekend, and they give up 2 goals in that game. Who did Poland play, Danny, over the weekend? Was it Netherlands?
Yeah, it was the Dutch, and they went up 1-0 and then lost 2-1.
Right. So Karol came in for the last 30 minutes of that match. I think he had 1 shot on goal. And
yep. And the I'll double check his stats, but the thing of it was is the person who scored the Polish goal was a guy who directly competes with Karol for playing time, Adam Buksa, a former New England Revolution striker who fit a nice header off of a corner kick. He showed a great ability to finish. Karol did have the 1 shot on target, with a XG of 0.27. So, you know, it was from right in the – you could argue he could have scored that one, but I don't know. I mean, Carroll's fighting for playing time on his own national team here, and they might only have, 2 games left. So we'll see. Although they do take third place team, like a few of the third place teams in group will get through, which is different than the World Cup you might be used to. So they play Austria and France still to come. Poland does. So I don't see them beating France. So they're going to have to beat Austria and maybe hope for a draw against France. If they get 4 points, they might advance, but I don't think it looks that good for them personally.
Big news out of the France match today is that Mbappe, broken nose, probably going to have to wear a mask for the rest of the tournament. And also, France didn't score a goal. It was an own goal conceded by Austria in that 1-0 win. So both France and England, probably not the strongest starts to Euro, both win 1-0 over the weekend. I'd say those are the 2 favorites. Spain looked good, though, against Croatia. It's a 3-0 win for Spain over Croatia.
I'd have called Spain the favorite after 1 round of games, for sure.
So we'll see what happens. I think the Euro is only going to get better. I thought the first weekend was kind of tame. I think a lot of the results were somewhat predictable. But we did have some moments, if you will, throughout the matches. So I'm excited to follow that this week. I'm excited to get back to the bank, Danny. It's a quick turnaround to get everybody back. It was a nice 30,000 people in the house on Saturday night. Great turnout on a really hot, sweltering summer Saturday in Charlotte. I think Wednesday night, it might be a little cooler on Wednesday evening, but it could be the uptown post-work crowd. And that's, if you're working uptown on Wednesday, why not hang out for a little bit, have some beers over in the French Quarter, come down to Hot Fly, hang out at Hot Fly on South Main Street before the match. There's so many options. There's going to be a lot to do, and I think the vibe is going to be really, really good uptown on Wednesday for this midweek match. I think the vibe is going to be great. So make sure you get yourself up there and enjoy the city. It's the reason why I think the city, in all seriousness, the city council, hears arguments for this Tepper Sports and Entertainment project, and there's a lot of people in favor of this stadium improvements and renovation going through. And the reason why is because it really helps business. And I think uptown on Wednesday night from the hours of, 4 to 8 o'clock could be a really good place to be. And that's a good thing for the city.
Yeah. I mean, if it was up to me, I would vote against the $650 million. That's not even a consideration to me. It's not up to me and it is almost certain to pass. So it doesn't really matter. But I just think when you've got a guy with David Tepper's resources, I think it's a little bit obscene to be asking city taxpayers to cover 80% of your costs on an expansion and retrofitting. But
I think the best argument there, Danny, is, and I think the best argument is that it could go to something else.
Right. And people say, oh, well, this money has to be spent on tourism. Well, it's like, and yes, the stadium does bring tourism, but it's not there's a lot of other good tourism things that you could spend $650 million on. And Mr. Tepper, Daddy Tep, I would love you to adopt me. If you adopt me, I might change my tune here, but, until then, it's not the way that we should be spending that money. There's definitely better ways for Charlotte to spend that money, even if it was just infrastructure and just making the city easier to get around. I deal with traffic in the city all the time. I know you do some driving for your job, John. You probably get stuck in a bunch of dumbass traffic jams, and there's so many choke points and crappy intersections all around uptown, and it could definitely be improved for sure, but they could even probably spend $650 million for the whole, make 285 a river, right? Is that the movement? Like instead of having a highway loop around uptown, just have a river up, go around uptown.
I think they would call that a moat, right?
Yeah. Well, hey, a moat around the fortress to protect the key. Why not? But yeah, I mean, again, that's not what this episode is about. And again,
It's part of the conversation for sure. I mean,
yeah, the motion is almost certain to pass, so it doesn't really matter what I think. But I just, if you ask me, not a good investment of Charlotte tax dollars because there's such a much more obvious source. If the ownership group of Charlotte FC was like struggling and like barely keeping afloat and was like, hey, we're not going to be able to do this without the tax dollars. That's one thing, but this is so obvious that that's not the case that I don't like it. It doesn't pass the smell test for me whatsoever, but hey.
We're in a two box on YouTube right now. So, I mean, we could turn this into like a Fox News kind of debate show where we talk about policy and really dive into the issues. And
right. And I'm not an expert, so that would make it even more like Fox News. I'm just spouting off saying a bunch of random shit,
We can have fun doing that, just sharing opinions. That's what we do here on Charlotte Soccer Show. It's great to have everybody hanging out for this episode, whether you're driving in the morning, heading to work on a Tuesday, or catching this pre-match or after the match against Orlando. I think that's the one last thing we have to do, Danny. We got to talk about this match. We got to make predictions and say what's going to go down on Wednesday night for this chance for Charlotte FC to pick up 6 points in 5 days.
Yep, and let's kick off that conversation with the last little sound bite here that I clipped for the show. This is because you talk about bringing in a star. You talk about finding our offensive bite, finding our scoring power, our verve, and finishing. And I mentioned right off the top how disappointed I was in Patrick's really huge blown chance late first half. Here's Dean on that chance, a little more optimistic about it. And then he's going to mention a name at the end of this, Johnny, that I think you're going to like to hear. And we can start the discussion of what we do against Orlando from there.
I think he's adjusted well. I think players now in the league know him a lot more. I still think he causes lots of problems. As you can see, there's not many centre forwards in this league that would have got the chance that he got because he kind of made it himself. He he powered his way through two centre backs and got on the end of the chance, and that next thing is for him to, you know, regularly hit the target. But yeah, he's taken to the role really well, you know. But I actually liked bringing Scott on as well for him when I thought, you know, he tired and he got a little bit loose when the ball was played into, and I thought Scott came on and kept the ball really well for us and used his nous and his experience really well.
La 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 la.
Scotty Arfield.
Gotta love the Scotty shout out from the gaff.
Well, I mean, giving him props at the striker position too, right? Mm-hmm. And he's talking about Patrick Ajimong there, and he gives Scotty Arfield some props for coming in and playing that striker position. I think that's it's a fun sub, and I think maybe Dean Smith is just looking for experience. He's looking for finishing ability. Mm-hmm. And if Scott Arfield wants to keep his fitness up and play in that that false nine position, I think he could.
It's a great way to close out a match, especially when you're leading, because like you said, possession and veteran leadership.
Yeah, because he likes to, and Scotty really does like to play at the Fortress. Yeah,
he just likes to play. That's
yeah. And I've talked to him about it, and you could see it on the field as well, to where when he is in that front four, you know, the three forwards and then the number 10, the creative midfield position, the attacking midfielder, that position he's played and started this year at the Fortress in that role. He's got a lot of minutes, more minutes, I think, than somebody would think this season Arfield has. And Dean Smith clearly likes him, and Arfield likes to be in control. When he's out on the pitch, Danny, it's something that really doesn't get discussed a lot, but it's the ability to communicate, to talk. Mm-hmm. When Arfield's on the pitch, I mean, he's barking like a dog out there. He's telling everybody where to be, what to do, where the next pass is. Ashley Westwood's really good at that too. But Scott Arfield is a veteran in that way. And you can tell when he's conducting, if you will, that the team is more together from a communication point of view.
And Milanda has stepped into that role as well. I mean, he's barking all around the back line, especially on opposing set pieces. DC had a run of corners late that really could have put us in a bad spot. But when you talk about Charlotte, the change of like 2023 Charlotte FC always conceding late, and then 2024 Charlotte FC being able to see out results a lot better, not perfectly, but a lot better, it's communication, like you said. And guys like Arfield, guys like Westwood, guys like Milanda are doing that. But what about scoring goals? Because we got to do it. We heard Bronico talk about, well, we got to finish our chances more. We heard Dean say, oh, you know, Patrick, he missed the chance, but that's a chance that he made for himself and not a lot of strikers get. Can that, like, we've been hearing that for literally months now. Like, does it start to get old for you like it does for me to hear, like at some point, I mean, I guess I don't want necessarily Dean Smith attacking his players through the media, but at some point, it's like we hear the same thing over and over again. Like, you know, we should have finished the chance, but we got the chance. We should have finished the chance, but we got the chance. And it's just like, it doesn't matter if you don't get the result. You know?
I'll put it this way. At this point, I know what Charlotte FC is. And for me, I don't even consider anymore thinking, oh, can they put up three or four tonight? If it happens, great. I go into Wednesday against Orlando and I think to myself, okay, which one of these players can nick a goal? Who can score, and maybe Charlotte FC can win 1-0. Maybe Charlotte FC can win 2-0. And that's how they want it to be, and that's how they're going to see it out and get those 3 points on Wednesday. That's who this team is right now. And that's, at this point, I have accepted that, and I have openly criticized that. And I am happy with the table position, and everything that Dean Smith is doing for this club right now is super professional, but it's certainly a tough watch sometimes, and I do expect it to be another difficult watch on Wednesday night against Orlando City on a short week. I think, and I hope this team can win 1-0.
I think, yeah, we need to adapt to that famous chant that they sing in North London whenever it turns red. 1-0 to the crown, 1-0 to the crown, 1-0 to the crown, 1-0. To the crown. That would be amazing. Yeah, I would love if we could get ourselves together for a chant like that, but probably not going to happen. But yeah, that's what Arsenal supporters sing, because they had this decades-long tradition of winning 1-0, and they started to wear it as a badge of pride. Maybe that's just Charlotte FC's identity, like you say. It's like, hey, winning 1-0 is still winning. So maybe we should just own it and accept it and put it as a badge of honor.
Yeah, it's like being able to own exactly what your golf game looks like, Danny. Yeah. It's like, hey, you know, I hit, someone says, hey, what, I hit it 265 yards. Well, it's like, you don't have to hit it 330 yards. Just play your 260 and just own it, accept it what it is, and play from there. And I think if Charlotte FC can sit back and say, this is who we are and accept who they are, and the fans can do it too. Like I said, I already have. You know, I was like, we've done this, you know, we've done this on the show. It's like, is this fun football? No, it's not. And to the point where people are reaching out to me, I've got people hit me up laughing about the fact that I'm like bitching and moaning and if in a jokingly way, after a win, which is good. And I'm, you know, I want to give a special shout out to our friend, Len Kornacki, a great, tremendous friend of the show. He's going to get a huge shout out on tonight's show because he and I went back and forth on Twitter today because, you know, he was talking about Enzo Capetti.
Careful. Careful on Twitter.
He was talking about Enzo Capetti and talking about all the work that he's done off the ball and what he contributes to a team and why fans gave him probably a rough shake. Unfortunately, he used Olivier Giroud as the comparison, and Giroud's work rate for France, and it just, to me, I didn't see a comparison between Enzo Capetti and Olivier Giroud. And it's not about the players, it's about the work rate, so I understand that point of view. But it's just one of those debates, Danny Brams, and soccer is a weird sport, right? Where people see different things in different players. People want to see different results from the club as far as winning, as far as signing players. Everybody kind of wants something different when it comes to the club, and it's okay to just kind of want, I think, what you'd like, especially as somebody that, you know, pays season tickets when you go to a match and you kind of want to see a brand of football. It's okay to want that. But you have still to accept the way that it is. And that's kind of where I'm at with this team.
Yeah, I mean, all due respect to Copetti, good-looking dude, but Olivier Giroud is the most handsome soccer player in history, and so I don't really think
that... There is no comparison there.
You can't really compare. Yeah. I mean, all
Olivier Giroud... Both do very much care about their hair.
Yeah, most definitely. Although Ollie is more about just like allowing the perfection of his hair to thrive, whereas Enzo's always trying to do stuff with his hair, you know, to make it stand out. Ollie's just that natural, cool, like, I know I have... Enzo's like, hey, look at my great hair. And Ollie's like, yeah, of course I have great hair. You know, like it's like, no comparison. Love you, Lenny C. I love the fact that you're going for a strong comparison there. But Olivier Giroud makes me question the metaphysics of, like, time and space and attractiveness, you know. So it's like, it's not... Not even a thing compared to Enzo Capetti.
But it was just fun to throw out there on the show, and I want to give Lenny a shout out for that because
he always deserves one.
We always appreciate you listening to the show and engaging in fun debates. Always have fun engaging with you, Danny, in debates on the show. We're gonna make sure that continues as the season rolls on. We're gonna watch some soccer together this week for sure, and then, you know, as these weeks continue to roll on, we're definitely gonna get together for an away watch party at some point back at Hopfly. I mean, we can get to EPR at one of these nights as Charlotte FC heads out on the road, because after this match, Danny, it's 6 of 7 matches on the road for Charlotte FC.
Yeah, it's road warrior time, and then it's Leagues Cup after that, right? Or so we go to your old stomping grounds of Philly, we go to my old stomping grounds of Austin, we're going to Houston, we're going to Cincinnati and Columbus, the Ohio double, and that's a double game week. We got to play at Cincy, I believe, on a Saturday, and then at Columbus on a Wednesday. That's not going to be easy. That's going to be real tough. Those are two, you know, as we start to end here, we'll double flashback up on the screen, the old table, and you can see Cincy and Columbus are right there. Either side of us, really. Columbus has three games. We're 1 point ahead of Columbus, and they have 3 games in hand on us. So, I mean, Columbus could, with their, you know, sort of delayed schedule, they could shoot right to the top of this thing. If they were to win, you know, they have 4 games in hand against Miami. So if Columbus were to win their 4 games in hand against Miami, they'd actually be in first place in the East. So, you know, Cincinnati, same thing, has 2 games in hand on Miami. The conspiracy theory of Miami got extra games at the start of the season so that they would have extra points and always be in first place lives on. And we know that that's actually got to be 100% true because I invented it in my brain. So why would it not be true? But yeah, it's tenuous. We, as good as it feels to be in fifth place, when you look at the games played stat, it starts to become a little bit like, it's like, how real is this? Is this a mirage? Like, what are our true playoff hopes in a situation where a lot of teams could catch us just by playing the games that we've already played?
Now, I disagree with that. I think it's just one team. It's Columbus, who has, as you mentioned, three games in hand. Philly and Nashville having one, that means nothing to me. Okay. At this point, it's just one game in hand.
That's fair.
So for Charlotte FC to win on Saturday and get up to 31 points, that right there helps the playoff hopes in a big, big way. And you got to think about it that way. And at this point, I expect Charlotte FC to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And this road run, in order to make the playoffs, I think we're going to have to, take our medicine and swallow some draws. I think that some draws might happen on the road during this 6 out of 7 run. So
I'll take a road draw.
3 points against Orlando seems really important when you think about it that way. Mm-hmm. So it's down at the bottom
of the standings for sure.
It's a big match for the crown on Wednesday. Another 3 points, hopefully coming your way. I'm going to be at Hot Fly beforehand. I don't, Danny Bram, you plan to be at Hot Fly beforehand?
I work down in Ballantyne. I get off at 7. I'm going to be racing north. Probably be walking into the stadium. Probably right around kickoff time. Hopefully a little sooner than that. We'll see, depending on traffic and parking. But it is the kind of night where I don't do a lot of post game. I'm not a big post partier because I am usually exhausted and because I've been going all day pregame. So with not much pregame, I might be a little more inclined to some post game action.
Post gaming on a Wednesday night, that's pretty impressive. I love to hear that. And if Charlotte FC can win, it'd be a good reason to get back to Hot Fly and have some beers post match. Always a good time to do that. I'm John Hayes. He's Danny Brams. This is the Charlotte Soccer Show. Appreciate you watching us on YouTube. Appreciate you listening to us on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get podcasts. Make sure you rate us, leave us a review, tell us how much you like the show. It's the reason why we do it. And until the next time we do it, Danny Brams.
For the crown, baby.